from WILL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Thursday, November 3rd. Coming up, only one of every three fourth graders in Illinois is a proficient reader, and that puts the state in the middle of the pack. We'll learn how educators are trying to help. That story coming up in just a few minutes. But first, these headlines. A recent report from two environmental justice groups found most Illinois coal-fired plants are not complying with a federal rule to curb groundwater contamination. Mawa Iqbal has more.
The Environmental Protection Agency established rules in 2015 to prevent coal ash leakage and treat contaminated water. But Abel Russ says plants have been slow to act. He is with the Environmental Integrity Project and co-authored the study with Earth Justice.
There's still going to be this huge legacy of contamination that has to get dealt with. And I think the trick is to make sure the industry takes responsibility and is held accountable for it now, before it's too late and it becomes a taxpayer issue down the road.
Russ says statewide agencies can help the EPA enforce the coal ash rule. Several toxic coal ash sites are located in densely populated areas like Joliet and Waukegan. I'm Mawa Iqbal.
Governor J.B. Pritzker says the state will be able to afford his plan to make college free for low- and middle-income students. The governor and other Democrats made a campaign stop yesterday at Illinois State University in Normal. Pritzker says he and Democrats in the General Assembly have stabilized the state's finances, catching up on overdue bills and winning 6 credit upgrades. He says that allows for more investments in things like higher education.
We need to keep balancing the budget going forward and running surpluses. That's what's going to allow us to raise the amount of money available for college scholarships and let more kids go to college for free.
Joining Pritzker at ISU were two Democrats running to represent parts of Greater Peoria in Springfield, Sharon Chung and Dave Kaler. Chung's Republican opponent, Scott Preston, today announced his endorsement by the mayors of East Peoria, Washington, Bartonville, and Morton. This week, Champaign-Urbana celebrated the memories of those who have passed away for Day of the Dead. Illinois Newsroom's Luis Velasquez has more.
At an event for Día de los Muertos at the University YMCA, guests painted sugar skulls and participated in a community ofrenda, or altar. Julio Velasco is an assistant director of La Casa Cultural Latina at the University of Illinois. He helped organize the event, partially to bring together the local community.
It just gives us an opportunity to honor and celebrate our loved ones that we've lost, really get a chance to reconnect with a lot of people that are very dear to us, and also just really important because it gives us a place to build community and just be amongst like people that matter to us.
Velasco also hopes those who didn't know about the holiday were able to learn. El Día de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, originated in Mexico to remember those who have passed away. The holiday takes place on November 1st and 2nd. I'm Luis Velasquez, Illinois Newsroom.
Spurlock Museum in Urbana is highlighting the Hispanic tradition of the quinceañera, a celebration of a girl's coming of age on her 15th birthday. The exhibit, named Quinceañera, Celebration, Joy, and Ethnic Pride, was created by professors and graduate students at the University of Illinois. Beth Watkins, a member of the exhibits committee at Spurlock, says she worked with the team of creators to bring a museum exhibit's structure to the project. She says the exhibit will spotlight underrepresented communities in Champaign-Urbana.
For people to see experiences that they recognize in a museum is really important for making the museum feel like museums are paying attention to me as a person in contemporary America. I matter.
The exhibit will run until December 4th. Still to come, we'll learn how educators are working to raise reading scores for school children in Illinois. Peter Medlin brings us that story coming up next on 217 Today.
The 21st is where Illinois gathers for news, information, and daily conversation on politics, the pandemic, culture, and everything in between. I'm Brian Mackey, inviting you to join the conversation anytime, day or night, by leaving us a voicemail. The number is 217-300-2121, and we might play it on air. Then tune in Monday through Thursday at 11 a.m. on AM 580 and 6 p.m. on FM 90.9.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Only one of every three fourth graders in Illinois is a proficient reader, and that puts the state in the middle of the pack. Peter Medlin reports on why kids are struggling to read and how educators want to fix it.
Reading is not natural. That's one thing David Page says a lot of people just don't understand. He's a literacy professor and director of the Jerry Johns Literacy Clinic at Northern Illinois University.
Almost all of us learn to speak naturally. We're exposed to people and speech just naturally emerges. However, reading does not naturally emerge.
Now, what he's getting at is that there's a scientific process to teaching someone how to read. You can't just plop them in a room full of Dr. Seuss and Charles Dickens books and hope they soak it up. Now, that might be a silly example, but Page says that in many cases, reading curricula have strayed from reading research. And you can see it in test scores. National Association of Education Progress reading scores fell by 3% this year.
3 points doesn't sound like much. It is huge. It is a massive, massive drop.
It's bad, but he says it's also not new. Reading scores have been bad for a long time. So how do we fix it? How should we teach kids to read then? Page says that it starts with phonics. Phonics lessons teach the relationship between letter combinations and the sounds they make. For example, the word cat has the ka sound from the C and the at sound from the A and T, like in hat or bat. Now that might sound simple, but he says it is a critical part of the process.
If you can't get to where you can pronounce the words fluently, you never really get much to comprehension. It's very difficult because you're always focusing your attention. Oh, here's another word. How do I say that word?
Unfortunately, Page says many schools and educators don't build that phonics foundation strong enough before moving on to other parts of reading like vocabulary knowledge and language structure. Pam Riley is an instructional coach at the Plano School District in Kendall County. She and a team of teachers have spent the past few years revamping their reading instruction. And we're in a classroom at Emily G. Johns Elementary School where she's showing me a colorful illustration of what's called Scarborough's reading rope. There are 8 strands that make up the rope, 3 at the top and 5 at the bottom. The top side represents word recognition skills like phonics, and the bottom represents language recognition, which gives context to the words and the story that they're reading them in.
30 years ago, we really focused on phonics and then realized we can't forget about this side of Scarborough's reading rope. And I think the pendulum swing went more this way and not as much on the foundational skills. Now we're swinging back where they're saying we have to have these foundational skills.
The pandemic was sort of a reset button for Riley. She researched structured literacy and worked with her elementary school teachers for a year on a new program, relearning how to teach phonics. And it included third grade teachers who weren't used to teaching phonics because they had thought that kids had had it down by then. They met every week over lunch to pore over data, and Riley says it's working.
We had green across the board for our fall scores for growth. So we are headed in the right direction.
David Page calls reading instruction a race from the day a child starts school until the second or third grade.
Who decides whether or not a child's a good reader? The child decides that. They make that decision. And if they've decided that they're not a good reader, then it just goes down a very slippery, steep slope that's not good.
They might act out to avoid reading in class. It might make them anxious or ashamed. And that's why Page says resources and support have to be there the minute they step into school. Pam Riley says they're monitoring student progress so they can jump in with that support for whichever strand of the reading rope a child might need help with. But the race is on. And Jessica Handy wants to make sure people realize just what's at stake if we fail students. She's the policy director at Stand for Children, an educational equity group that advocates for education policy.
If a student in third grade is unable to read proficiently, they're 4 times more likely to drop out of high school. And if they're low income, that number goes up to 6 times.
And she says there are schools of every size and demographic that aren't teaching reading well. But in a wealthy district, parents can pay for tutors if their child is struggling to read.
It is inexcusable that a kid's ability to learn how to read is based on whether their parents can afford that or not.
She's been working on the Right to Read Act, originally introduced in the Illinois legislature this spring, but currently being rewritten with an aim towards reintroducing it next year. It could include non-mandatory training modules for teachers and teacher candidates about evidence-based literacy, tools if districts want to evaluate how well their curriculum works, and short-term grants for schools that want to start a new program but can't afford it. Handy says that Mississippi is the clearest case study for why statewide literacy policy matters.
They went from being, 49th or 50th in reading to now they're middle of the road with us. They're actually a little bit higher than us.
But there are other states where comprehensive literacy policies didn't get those kind of results. And Handy says that's why they're trying to take time and include as many stakeholders as they can to implement it correctly. I'm Peter Medlin.
And finally, in your forecast, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says it will be sunny and warm today with a high of 75 degrees. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Sydney Wood. Reporting today contributed by Mawa Iqbal, Ryan Denham, Luis Velasquez, Jacqueline Barba, and Peter Medlin. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moline. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.